Hello and welcome to Our Son Pete, a monthly Patreon-exclusive WMQ&A bonus podcast where I, Dan Grote, read through every appearance of British mutant spy master Peter Winston Wisdom. This month, we're covering Excalibur Volume 1, number 98, aka the one where the team blows stuff up real good, and I'm honored to be joined by an amazing guest. She's a writer, fellow comics podcaster, artist, comic creator, and filmmaker. Please welcome Sarah Century. Sarah, how are you?
Doing so well. It's about 8 p.m. right now as we're recording this where I'm at, and I've had, you know, kind of a long day that was full of all of the emotional roller coasters of living your life in 2023. I'm excited to crack into Pete Wisdom, as I was saying before we started recording. I don't think anybody has ever actually asked me about this guy, so I'm pretty excited to get into it.
And I am excited to get into it with you. Before we get into the meat of the matter, the reason for the season, you recently published a book of short stories. What is it called? What's it about? How can people get their filthy or clean hands on it?
Yeah, I guess I won't check your hands before you buy it. Now I might, though. Yeah, it's called A Small Light and Other Stories. It is a horror anthology. It's a collection of a bunch of short stories that I've written for horror anthologies. It's through Weird Punk Books, which is a really great independent bookstore that does a bunch of kind of weird horror that I think is all really great. Just the exact kind of horror that I love, where it's like visceral but emotional, and you know, there's always kind of this extra element of people kind of trying to work through it, I guess, because that's my favorite kind of horror. So it's basically just that. It's a very queer book. People can find it there. I think you can also read the ebook on Amazon if you want to. You said you can't curse, but is there like a don't say Amazon rule? Because I will respect it. But if some people only read on Amazon. So like, that's, you know, what you gonna do? Not everybody wants to fill their house with stacks and stacks of physical copies like I do. I'm about ready to move and I'm just like, no, why do I buy the books? Why do I buy them? They're made out of trees. They're the heaviest thing to move. It's terrible. But yeah, A Small Light. And yeah, I'm also doing this anthology horror podcast that's called Decoded Horror Channel. And you can listen to that. There's an adaptation of one of my stories on there already, but it's just a whole bunch of different people. We do different themes and seasons and stuff like that. Oh, and of course, Bitches on Comics, right? So I'm always doing a lot of things, basically.
Keeping very busy and also soon to be moving many, many books. I hope you have enough
and
boxes.
Pets. Pets and books. It's like what my dowry is in this life is like pets and books.
Also, I found out it was announced recently that you are going back to Cerebro for the Madeline Pryor episode. That's huge.
Isn't that huge? Yeah. Well, we make it be huge, I think, no matter what, right? Because we went on for, or I was on previously for Candy Southern. Mm-hmm. And I think Candy Southern was one of those characters that people just go right by, honestly. Like, they just don't even take the time. But both Connor and I really loved that character just so much, you know? Like, it was, we were talking, I think, during, like, the Rachel Summers episode, and we were both just like, let's do a Candy Southern episode, and then we come back, like, a couple months later, and yeah, it was basically just because I never met anybody that loved her as much as I did, and I think maybe same for Connor, like, we were both just, like, so united with our love for this character that has appeared in, I don't know, 20 issues of the X-Men ever. And yeah, just like, yeah, just an interesting one. But every time I go on Cerebro, it's always so fun. I didn't know that he was ever going to do a Madeline Pryor episode because he was on Bitches on Comics and he's like, I'll never do one. Every episode is the Madeline Pryor episode. And
I'm just like, I assumed he already had.
Right. Yeah, I was already on for the Jean Grey episode and the Rachel Summers episode. And so at that point, you're just kind of like, you got to come back for the Madeline Pryor. That's like the other part of this story. We gotta hear about her.
The holy trinity of redheaded Summer's women.
Yeah. I'm so excited. I love Madeline Pryor. I think she's such a good character. And the first time I met her as a kid, I think was in X-Man. Because yep. It was the 90s.
that weird incestish arc, yes.
I mean, yeah, it's just like it's baked into my understanding of both him and Madeline Pryor at this point. So I read it as a kid. I believe it came out around the same time as the comic we're going to talk about today, right?
Yeah, just about.
Kind of late 90s era. What? It was just so wild. It's like, why did you do that in a comic? But also, it's kind of wild too that it's so like low key that it happened. Like they're just like, yeah, they just like hooked up. It's her kid. That's like so weird. Oedipus. Oh, that's what I call Nate Gray. That's what his code name should be.
Yeah. What a time to be alive and reading X-Men comics and preparing for Onslaught. But what is your history with Pete Wisdom and this era of Excalibur in general?
Yeah, this was a comic that was kind of hit and miss. I was always reading comics my whole life. I've been reading them way back in the day. Even before I was reading superhero comics, I think I was probably reading, you know, like Hot Stuff and Archie, mm-hmm. and even comic strips, which I think totally count. Like people yes. act like they don't, but that's still comics. So yeah, I've read all of the comics I could get my hands on for my entire life, and then one day of course fall in love with the X-Men because I'm a kid. It's like the early 90s. Like how are you gonna avoid it?
What else were you gonna do, play the Pogs?
What was I gonna do? That was it was Pogs or X-Men. And I knew some people, like the guys in my family, like my dad and my brothers read comics too a little bit, but there was just like no comparison of the way that it just like absolutely ignited me. Like once I found the X-Men, because I was like, I have to read everything. This is the greatest thing I've ever heard of. It's so great. I was obsessed with it. And of course, one thing leads to the next, then you meet Pete Wisdom and Excalibur. But the comic wasn't that prominent, I guess. Like it would show up at this gas station that I bought comics from, and okay. it would be there sometimes, but it wouldn't always be there. So I don't know if I read this issue specifically. I remember I had almost all of like the Ben Rob ones that are coming like right around the bend. Like,
yeah, the ones I'm dreading, yes.
Yeah, fair enough. I get why you are. It's kind of a weird time for Excalibur, right? And I think that this was kind of where I had just met them. I believe that the first one I got might have been issue 90 or something. It was super okay. spotty. I got the Onslaught. I got the Onslaught crossover that they had. Of course, that was at the gas station for sure, but it was hit and miss. This one didn't always show up. I don't know if I actually read this one, but I remember that Pete Wisdom always kind of, I guess, like irritated me a little bit during this time period because I just never clicked with him. I never got him. I was always kind of puzzled by him a little bit. And I think about him more and I'm like, it's just because of the time. It was like the late 90s. It was harder to like this specific character because this character was in every single book. Like there was a Grifter, there was a Logan, you know, there always had to be this yeah. guy who's kind of popping off the whole time. And you're just like, can you focus? Like we're working. Like, but the cool thing about Pete is that he actually is pretty focused. Like he's good at kind of taking a step back in a way. And I think that that's the thing that I appreciate about him the most is that even when he's popping off, he still is this character that listens when people tell him to shut his mouth, basically. Like he'll probably still murmur, you know, and talk a bunch of shit under his breath. But, you know, he's just one of those characters that I think actually does listen to the people who are in charge and kind of recognizes that he shouldn't necessarily be in charge. So I appreciate that about him. I also like that everybody hates him. Like everybody in this book is like, get out of here, buddy. Like Nightcrawler's like, I'll never understand what you see in this man. We're all right there with you, Nightcrawler, but it's just like, I don't know. I kind of enjoy this guy a lot. And I'm sure that like, since you have been doing this podcast, you have had time to really examine your feelings about him. But I'm curious, how has your thoughts on him changed from the beginning of this podcast to like this episode?
You know, it's interesting. I think, so, you know, reading these comics when they came out, when I was like, I guess I would have been 16 at this point, you know, I loved the guy. I think because he was the Wolverine grifter Gambit. Jason Todd was dead at this point.
But he came back to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know,
he counts.
The version of that, of that archetype that spoke to me, you know, kind of going through and rereading it now, you know, obviously there's the Warren Ellis baggage of it all, but this arc in particular, what I forgot was how sort of sidelined he is at the beginning of it. Like, oh, we're just going to give him a comic relief plot for two issues where he's going to get into a back and forth with Lockheed, who, by the way, had not appeared to single Warren Ellis Excalibur comic until this point. And they're just going to do a weird Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd thing for two issues. And now suddenly this decompressed arc is picking up steam, and he's sort of the character that I recognized again. And we'll talk a little bit about, like you mentioned, the idea that like he knows when to shut up. I do feel like there's weird dynamics in this issue, and I think part of that is Ellis trying to shake up his own story arc, and you know, we'll kind of get into that as we go. But first, just to catch the readers up, so previously in Excalibur number 97, the team tries to make sense of all the plots swirling around it all of a sudden with Black Air and the London Hellfire Club. And while they're all in the kitchen hashing it out, Doug Locke is kidnapped by Black Air. Also, Pete continues his Bugs and Fudd rivalry with a purple cartoon dragon. But with that out of the way, let's talk about Excalibur number 98, Fireflies, cover date June 1996. Written by Warren Ellis, drawn by Carlos Pacheco, inked by Bob Wycheck, colored by Ariane Lunchwick, with separations by Malibu, lettered by Richard Starkings and Comicraft, and edited by Suzanne Gaffney, with a cover by Pacheco and Wycheck, in which Pacheco really gets to show off the new costume that he made for Nightcrawler, which apparently, based on the way he's posed, includes a blue cod piece and maybe black bicycle shorts, or maybe that shadow. So yeah. Kurt's look here is one of the hallmarks of the Pacheco run of Excalibur. Sarah, were you a fan of the looks during this period?
Did you read Wizard magazine when you were a teenager?
I did.
Okay,
yes.
Cool. I remember that people were like really ripping on this costume, and that I think that it was pretty good, honestly. I mean, his look is good. He's, you know, like, he's one of those characters where every single time he shows up, he's really well dressed. You know, it's like you kind of can't go wrong with the color scheme that they have for him, the yellow eyes and the blue fur and all of this. The goatee is definitely like a little silly, right? But it's still pretty good, honestly. He's flying at you with a sword on the cover. He looks rad. How do you feel about it?
I think I liked it at the time, and I think I like it now. I mean, Kurt is, he's the Superman colors, right? He's the primary colors. As long as he's in some combination of red, yellow, and blue, it works. I mean, he's wearing like a red duster vest now in Legion of X, and I think that works too.
It does. It's wild. I'm like, I don't know if dusters like work for everybody, but they sure seem to work for Kurt, right?
he is pulling it off. Yes,
he's absolutely dapper. That's the thing. He shows up, he's got his sword, he's just this guy. He's very charming, you know. It's like, you, it's, that's what, how he looks, that's the design. And this is very like 90s, like it's very like, check out what year it is, right? But
yeah, the close cropped hair and the goatee are a dead giveaway that we're in like season 3 of Friends.
Yeah. This is really a really good cover though, I think. And I appreciate the kind of the teleportation effect. I think it looks awesome on this cover.
Yeah, no, it's good, and it's well colored and all of that, absolutely. So Pacheco draws the book on and off during this period, and by on and off, I mean literally every other issue he's in, and then he's gone. But inside this issue, Marvel announces in the sort of X-Men centric version of bullpen bulletins that they were running at the time that he's leaving to draw Fantastic Four, which is a fuck you from a couple of angles, because yeah, it's Fantastic Four, and theoretically that's a bigger book than Excalibur, but also it's a couple Onslaught tie-in issues at the very end of the series. So, but either way, it's also Marvel going, yeah, this guy's too good for this book.
Yeah, they're like, get him out of here. Yeah, he's very good in this. I really appreciate his art. I haven't thought about it in just a little while. But he was all over the place during this time. I remember him popping up to do like Heroes Reborn and like all of that kind of stuff. So he was all over the place.
He was getting paid, absolutely. You know, and then the other funny thing is the letters page promises he'll be back for issue number 100. He only does the cover.
He does not come back for issue 100 except for the cover.
Honestly, the real ongoing penciler of this series is Casey Jones.
I was thinking about the art. I was thinking about kind of how X-Factor 2 around this time, the last issues of X-Factor, you're like, who's on this book anymore? Like, what's going on? And then it becomes Mutant X, and you have a solid creative team for a hot second. But it was kind of like this towards the end of a lot of stuff, right? Like, Warren, does he leave? He leaves on like issue 100, right? Or is it 99? 103. Ah, yes. Longer than I thought. Okay.
He does what? He stays at one till 103. Hmm. Then he does a 3-issue Pride and Wisdom mini, and then he's gone.
That's right. The Pride and Wisdom mini series. I forgot about that. Were you reading Excalibur really avidly during this time?
This, oh boy. All right. I think this might have been my favorite X book at the time. Wisdom was my character. I think this was my book, and I was reading all the ongoings at this point. Hit and miss with the minis, but definitely reading all the monthly titles.
I think about the same for me. I'm pretty sure that it was not even, I don't think it, Onslaught didn't get me out. Operation Zero Tolerance didn't chase me away. It wasn't until I think that there was an era. Oh, it must have been like when Alan Davis came to the X-Men. And it's like, I get it. There was problems. I get it. It's fine. fine. I just couldn't do it after that. I was like, I don't want to read hot Marrow. Like, I want Marrow to like be a Morlock, right? Like, or a member of Gene Nation, but that's a Morlock. It's like, it's fine. But she gets super hot in the Alan Davis. But it's pretty. It's a beautiful book. But you're just like, no, Apocalypse. No, the 12. No. So that was when I left. That was when I had to go. And then I came back for Grant Morrison, basically.
Yeah, 98 was when I started to peter out. I think once Siegel and Kelly were... Yeah.
That was it, right? That was rough.
Yeah, that's it. That was a rough one. And by then, I'd already dropped... I dropped X-Force when Loeb left. I dropped X-Factor after Graydon Krieg got killed. I dropped Excalibur after a couple issues of Ben Rabb. And... I stuck with Cable. That was the only one I stuck with. I got through the 12 with him just because I wanted to see him fight Apocalypse.
There was never Cable at the gas station that I bought comics from, but they always had X-Man. It's so wild. 90s were a strange time.
That's rough.
I read so much X-Man, like so much. I was still buying it forever. I was like, every now and again, there's like a page or two I like.
That was another. So I, you know, I definitely unloaded a lot of those comics and X-Men. I don't know how long I was reading it for. I know at one point I had up to issue 25, but going through my file drawers recently, I only had the Age of Apocalypse issues.
Someone broke in and stole your issues of X-Men.
Yeah, that's what happened.
Who stole my X-Men? Nate. He's so funny. He's such a weird character. He's so funny. Age of X-Men.
That was a time.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Oh, here we are. Okay.
Topless Nate Gray. He's always walking around shirtless.
Sure was. So, quick summary for this issue. Tired of being on the back foot, Excalibur raids a Black Air facility looking for their kidnapped teammate, Doug Locke. Meanwhile, Brian starts getting to know his new friends in the London Hellfire Club better. Possibly by having sex with them? Jury's out.
Yeah.
But Sarah, opening thoughts for you on this comic.
Oh, it's wild. So like the first page, there's like Doug Locke is just getting stabbed through the chest, right? It's a wild opening. And then it kind of goes to, like military strategist version of Nightcrawler. And he's like, I can't be insulted by Black Air anymore, which I think is really kind of funny because none of us really remember Black Air, right? Like now we're just kind of like, oh yeah, that was like a Warren Ellis thing. Like that was from forever ago. I don't really think about Black Air that much now, but it was huge in this comic for a while. So I don't know. Yeah. So how have you enjoyed revisiting Black Air, I guess, because this was like such a big part of these books for forever.
I liked Black Air. I again, it was the mid-90s. I was watching a ton of the X-Files. Like this tracked for me, and especially like the beginning of Ellis's run, the whole Dream Nails trilogy. That's what that was. That was three episodes of the X-Files, like three conspiracy episodes. You
Yeah.
know, I mean, at one point, Wisdom even says the truth is out there. To mock the expression, but I mean, nonetheless, Warren Ellis is doing an X-Files,
Yeah.
and honestly, like that was a better story than this because it was more focused. It was a tight three issues. Ellis comes in and says, "Right, this guy's myself. Insert. He's cool. You love him. Yes, he's Poochie. Accept it and go. We're doing an X-Files. And at the end, there's going to be problematic sex stuff, but hey,
Yep.
as we'll all come to find out later, I'm Warren Ellis, so
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he writes a strange story here. I'll agree that this is kind of loose. Like this is a interesting because I think by the end of his run, he's kind of like, get me out of here, like going off to other stuff. And I think that this is kind of where it starts to fall apart. Before, I really liked how he was characterizing Wolfsbane.
Yes.
I think
Yeah.
that Wolfsbane does really well under him, right? Like, yeah, she's great. And then Moira is really fun during this time, even though every time we see Moira now, you've
It's
done
all
horrible
recontextualized.
things.
She's mourning being a human with a legacy virus, and I'm just like, stop putting on a show.
Stop lying. I know she drives me up the wall. That's what, like, yeah, every time you're just like, this bitch, oh no, you're gonna cut Banshee's face off, or like whatever that was. Like, that was wild. And you're literally gonna get murdered by Mystique and Destiny in a horrible way, and we're all gonna be like, kind of deserved it. Like, and that is nuts, right? Like, yeah, here she's still really good. And I loved this era of her, kind of. Like, I liked her relationship with Rain always. I think that they
Yes.
always had a really great relationship, and they're great in this book. And Pete, though, is. Pete and Alistair are like the same person almost, right? But then like they separate their characters a bunch, but they kind of already like there was already kind of an Alistair. And Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting how, like, kind of doesn't Alistair kind of like jump out? Like, he's not really in the book very much at this time.
Well, okay, so that's one of the things I wanted to point out. So the scene where they're all in the comms room planning strategy, and Pacheco kind of makes them all poses them all so that it's basically a pinup in a 70s living room with a sunken couch. That's kind of how they're all posed. And
Yeah.
you can see Pete, you see Colossus Kitty, Rain, Megan, Moira, you see Nightcrawler. They're all facing the camera. It's a family photo. They plan all their strategy. And all of a sudden, Alistair has been sitting behind Colossus the entire time, getting dwarfed by the giant Russian, kind of hunched over. And I feel like there should be a character who's like, ah, were you here the entire time?
Yeah, he's just kind of chilling and then he is gone, right? Like, we don't really see him after this, but yeah, interesting stuff with this guy. And it's just like, I remember him being pretty well characterized and kind of having like being guy with one-liners basically. Like, back in the day, he had like
Yeah.
a lot of like running jokes and stuff like that. I feel like it's almost like they can't. Because at first I thought that this was Pete Wisdom, like whenever I was looking at it. So there's definitely comparison. So I think it's like we better move him out. Like, he's got to get out of here.
Well, I think the whole idea is that, he's that holdover from, this simpler, sillier time of Excalibur. But
Yeah.
we have to bring this series into the 90s, so
Yeah.
the idea is that he's on the run for his life and he can't hack it in these black air times. No more fun being a fun David Tennant Doctor Who lookalike for you.
Oh man, David Tennant, right? Would totally play. All right, I got it. We've cast him. yeah, I know. This is it's interesting. I think this era of Excalibur is really good. It's very well written and there's a bunch of things to like about it. And then it's just like it's so different from what it was in the beginning. But that's kind of how a lot of these X books were in the 90s, right? Like, you have we go from New Mutants to X-Force and like all of that kind of stuff where you're just like, oh, I guess we're in like kind of a different everything's extreme now, right? So I don't know, it's interesting.
It took Excalibur longer to get there, though. When you think about, like, if you go to that book in 1991, it's still coasting on, like, Alan Davis comes back and he's writing and drawing the book, and you could do
Right.
that because Excalibur had a different tone and it served a different audience. But once Davis leaves, then you're sort of coasting along, and Lobdell and Harris get involved, and it's just like, well, we'll make it an X book. Won't really have much of a point, but we'll put some characters in a book and keep the trademark going. I mean, Ellis came in and kind of gave it a focus and
True, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I remember. I have a bunch of the Lobdell issues and they're like not very good. You're just like, good try, good try. I
and
mean,
that's when they start crossing over with the other X books too. So my first Excalibur issue was 71, the Fatal Attractions tie-in.
yeah.
And that one took me a while to start collecting regularly. I don't think I really started buying that monthly until probably Soul Sword Trilogy, because otherwise I would just check in every couple of months and it would just be like, okay, here's Sienna Blaze for some reason. Here's, Doug Locke, I wasn't like a fan of at first,
Yeah,
so.
okay. I think the first time I saw him, it would have been in this probably like this era of books, but I remember that cover that's like all black and it's just his yellow. He's kind of like curled up. I don't remember what issue it is, maybe like 102 or something.
Maybe,
But
yeah.
he's all curled up on the cover. And I remember that and just being like, I do like this character actually, because he's going through it. And then you see in this, he gets everything. He's just like always getting like eviscerated in this run. They're like, he's the robot, so just like stab him through the chest or whatever.
But Pacheco does such a good job drawing him too. Like this
Spiky
opening
hair.
splash, like the pain on his face and all the little fiddly techno-organic bits, like he took some time on this.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's very disturbing, but it's very beautiful. And that's kind of the thing with this guy. It's really fun when people kind of play around with the cybernetics and stuff. I always think it gives him a cool look. I could understand not being that into this character because he does be very data-ish sometimes, right? Where you're just
Yeah.
like, we get it. You want to like learn how to human, and maybe you were human once or whatever. We don't. We've already done it. We were doing it a lot in the 90s. But after he kind of, I don't know, he's an interesting character. He continues to kind of evolve. And then they go off to that Warlock series, right? By Louise Simonson with this character after the series runs. So,
Yes, M-Tech.
Imtech. I loved Imtech, actually. But yeah, no, he's having a terrible time. It's just, and you don't doubt that. It looks like it's very weird because he's like a horror story, and then the rest of it is like as you said, like maybe an X-Files, like a one of the more high-tech X-Files stories almost. Yeah, interesting stuff.
So yeah, Nightcrawler's calling the shots here, and Nightcrawler traditionally has been a bad leader. That was his whole sort of arc through the 80s and arguably up until he decided he was going to try and turn TechNet into good guys in Excalibur. But here it seems like he's sort of finally fallen into the role, or much like many other continuity points, Ellis just, didn't realize all that other stuff. But either way, when he's sort of giving the team their marching orders, he refers to Excalibur as a proactive group, which, given the era this book was coming out in, makes it sound like they're supposed to be X-Force,
Yeah.
even though that's what X-Force is for.
Yeah, you don't have to be proactive.
Yeah. No, I mean, they have like
You're on
their
like the
planes are on
science.
medical planes now.
Yeah, I know. I was like, you're on like the science island. Like, you don't have to be proactive.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, you've sort of got the mutant rescue gig that Marauders ends up having later.
Yeah.
But it's kind of looking deeper into the idea of a proactive mutant team. It's actually very rare that any X team has actually been that.
Yeah.
The team that I the first team that I can think of that actually comes closest to that in my mind is Cyclops's Suicide Squad right before House of X, where he was walking around with a checklist of random villains and just going after
Oh.
them. Like Matthew Rosenberg had Cyclops be like, I think I'll fight the upstarts today, and then just go
Yeah.
out and kill them or whatever.
Yeah.
You can't proactively have a cross time caper.
Everybody, let's go.
Yeah.
The cross town time caper certainly just kind of happens to you. Oh my God. Yeah, I know what you're saying about Nightcrawler as a leader. I was thinking about that. I think even here you're just kind of like, it just doesn't suit you, man. Like, you should just not do it because it feels like he's good at certain kinds of leadership. But he's not always, it's like it seems like it requires him to make sacrifices that he might not really want to make. Like, I think that he's more, and of course, they all have to do that in some respect or another, but it's just like kind of, it's not his mode, I guess. Like, him kind of stepping into this like leadership mode is always a little strange because it requires him being kind of a jerk, right? Like, he's just like, we're going in or like whatever. And you're just like, I guess, dude, like, but it's cool also when you're just doing hijinks. Like, I was just reading pretty recently, we're doing an X-Men series on the Bitches on Comics Patreon just because one of like Priya wanted to do it. So we're just doing a bunch of X-Men stories. And we were reading the early kind of like Phoenix Saga stuff. And Kurt is such a good team player. That's why he doesn't always. It's like he almost has to not think of that part of himself, or he almost has to like imitate Cyclops or something like that just to do leadership because
Yeah.
it's just like not his thing. Like, he just is better off. Like, he's so good at like rallying the troops. And if you read those original Phoenix Saga issues, which I'm sure you have,
Yes.
you have you have this whole thing where he's just like every single fight, he's like, okay, all I can do is distract him until these other people show up, or like it's always something along those lines. So the leprechauns, right? But it's like you see this kind of side of him, I think, here that's not necessarily like what his comfort zone is. And the thing is that Kate's here, so why is he the leader? It doesn't even make any sense, right? Like it should be Kate, but Kate's kind of doing other stuff off to the side, so that's fine. Kate's like trying to meet the love of her life and this cigarette smoking man. But
speaking of the X-Files.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting to see Kurt like this, don't you think? Because I don't think he really likes to return to this era of himself either. Like you see him now and he's always doing kind of other stuff, and he's kind of returned to his more peaceful self, which I think is just what I know him as.
It's weird. I think if there were a, not a boom boom on this team, but a boom boom type, I feel like there would be a comment at some point just like that just says, okay, Cable, you know, that sort of thing. Or, you know, if Amanda Sefton were in the room for this, she'd just be like, oh God, you're so sexy when you're angry.
You know what? I actually like don't mind it. And even though like whenever you like see that, you're like, oh no, it's your sister or whatever. And then you're just like, I kind of just like, I don't know, you guys work. And it's like very upsetting for us all. But like, don't worry about it, you know, just go for it, I guess. Cause I don't know. They're really cute together. They're like each other's best relationship by a pretty wide margin, I think. So I don't know.
If Nate Gray can make it work with his mom.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm always just kind of like, well, I don't know. Just like.
But, you know, in terms of people who other people who could have been leading this mission, I was actually, you know, this is Pete's old boss, you know, old bosses. Theoretically, he knows these facilities and, you know, their systems and everything. Like, theoretically, he could be co-parenting this op. But
at least, right? You're just like, do you know anything about this place? And Nightcrawler's just like, go mess it up. Like, go take your knife hands and just mess up the whole place.
And that's like, everybody has the same instructions. Pete, use your hot knives and blow things up. Colossus, use your entire body and blow things up. Megan, use your elemental nonsense powers and blow things up. That's it.
I know. It's not a great mission, but it is a proactive mission, I'll say. Something I think is like very, something that I strangely never thought about until I was reading this comic was that Nightcrawler doesn't have fingernails. I was like looking at the tip of one of his fingers and I was like, no fingernail. Right. That makes sense. But I just never thought about it, I guess.
You know, when it comes to things like that and like his toes.
Yeah.
I feel like I try not to think about those things too deeply because then I start getting squicked out by a character I otherwise actually very much like.
Yeah. It's like, how many knuckles you got in there? Okay. Never mind. Forgot it. Forget I asked. Like that's personal.
I'll ask Amanda instead. But anyway.
Oh no. She knows. She knows.
But then like, if Pete tried to run this up, I also feel like somebody would be like, didn't you just spend the last like 2 days fighting with a, you know, pet?
Just like, you're so far, you've just been a cartoon character to us. So could you step out of the way? And Kurt's mad, right? He's being mad dad. So you don't want to, you don't want to challenge Kurt. And he hates Pete, apparently. So
yeah, all good reasons to just not sit this one out, but just, you know, put your head down and do what you got to do.
You're just like, do you want me to blow things up with my knife hands? I'll do it. Okay, cool. All right, I'll just go do that for you, Kurt. And then you come back.
Yeah, I don't like using my mutant power, but it's whatever. It's okay.
It's whatever. It's fine. I'll do it for you, best friend.
please don't teleport my head into the English Channel.
I know, isn't that so scary? Yeah, it's terrifying. It's like, I feel like sometimes you're just like, oh, affable Kurt. And then you're like, I've seen evil Kurt, though, actually, in a few different AUs. And like, it's scary. He's scary. He's super scary in like the Age of Apocalypse Excalibur. That was terrifying.
Yes. Yes.
He's scary. Kurt, thank you for being nice. That's why I don't like to see him like this. I'm like, no, don't be proactive. Just do what you always do and be like, we're going to have to make more mutants or like whatever. This guy, watch some Errol Flynn movies or whatever.
But this is that era, right? It's that era where it's like, you guys all loved the Age of Apocalypse. Well, what if we took the 616 and just, you know, every once in a while, just make you feel like, you know, one of the characters is heading that direction, you know?
Yeah.
Like Iceman, a little chunkier, a little spikier, you know. We'll put Wild Child in X-Factor. You guys all loved him when he was Sabretooth's pet, right?
Such a weird thing that they did. Wild Child's such a weird character. That's a character not to do a podcast about, because you would just be like baffled the whole time. Oh no, somebody is gonna do one, right? Cerebro is gonna have to do Wild Child. Connor has to do it. We don't.
That's true. Can sit that one out. So we get to the raid on the Black Air station.
Yeah.
And again, Black Air not proving themselves subtle, because they have the fucking Cobra Terror Dome base, basically, with their logo emblazoned on the dome. It probably, you know, opens in quarters like that.
It has to.
Fires missiles from the, you know, walls and comes with a Viper Trooper.
There's a pool of sharks like with lasers on their head, like Austin Powers or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. It's just full James Bond, like Roger Moore era James Bond, not Connery.
Right. Fair enough. I love the action they have. They just throw Colossus. It's so funny. They just are always just throwing this guy at things.
That's my favorite line of favorite line of the issue. Dropped from a great height, he comprises the first Russian bomb to ever be dropped on England. That's a good line.
That is so good. I was cracking up at that. You're just like, all right, you win. You win the dialogue, or you win the exposition contest for this. This is really good.
This is the one and only time I will ever be excited about a Russian bomb.
I know, no kidding. At the beginning, I was like, the exposition is too much. I don't like this. This is too much. And then we make it to this place, and I'm like, all right, you got me. You got me. You won me over, I guess, with this like one line. Yeah, just tossing Colossus. Colossus just shows up to get hit by rocks, to throw rocks, like to get thrown out of things. Like, it's just what he does.
Colossus is a character that I think Ellis got settled with. And like,
yeah,
this is the first time since issue 92, when he beat up Pete Wisdom, that he had something to do. And so back when they're doing sort of the team roll call, he's giving each member of the team a descriptor. There's the mysterious Pete Wisdom, the intangible Shadow Cat, the elemental Megan. He is referred to as the newly joined Colossus. This is a character who at that point has about 20 plus years of history. He is a tank of living organic steel. I just use like three descriptors right there.
He's an artist, you know?
Yeah.
He does painting.
The sensitive psychopath at this point, you could say that.
Yeah. I know. It's so wild. I found that to be really funny, because I was like, also them being like, he's never had much confidence. And I'm like, are you sure? Because like, I've read a bunch of X-Men comics where he's doing all kinds of stuff. He's doing art. I think he's quiet, but I don't think he lacks confidence. That's like such a weird thing to say about him. I'm like, do you understand how many times Colossus has gone out, shot his, like, he will hook up with aliens. He will hook up with, you know, it's like he was an artist in like Soho for a little while, wasn't he? And he was just like, girlfriends, girlfriends, girlfriends. This guy has like traveled to the moon, for instance. Like, I was like, where does the lack of confidence thing come in? Because can you possibly be like, it just doesn't make sense to me. Cause I'm like, I've been reading these same comics. What's the lack of confidence? What's that line? Like, does he strike you as somebody who lacks confidence?
No, I think he's been confused with 1960s Silver Age Cyclops.
Right. Yeah, who was like, oh God, Jean will never love me. And Jean is like making puppy dog eyes at him like every single issue. And you're just like, can you shut up? She likes you. She likes you. And like the rich dude is like right here. He's super hot. He's super rich. And she's choosing to hang out with you, Scott. Like, come on.
Yeah, and briefly, Ted Roberts.
And pretty briefly. Yeah, pretty briefly. That's fine too. She was just like, I guess I'm just gonna date this guy. Like, Scott, what? Guess I'll just date him.
Yeah, sometimes you want a different kind of vanilla. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It was interesting. I was like, I don't think he's ever really struck me as how he's being described here, really, honestly, at all. Very weird stuff. Yeah, it's the same thing that he does as a writer, though, where you're just like, I guess we're just doing a different thing now. And that's fine. It's like the rule of the game, right? He's like, I kind of want this character to be like this. He was bored by him, but it's like, how could you be bored by Colossus? I love that character. He's always doing interesting stuff.
I mean,
he goes evil for a while and all kinds of stuff.
I mean, he spent 1993 through 95 getting the 91 through 95 getting the shit kicked out of him. There's trauma to unpack there, but it gets in the way of you know, Pete Wisdom and Black Air and the London Hellfire Club and, you know, all your self inserts and OCs.
Yeah, so. And being jealous because he's the ex or whatever. It's just like, Colossus is super hot. You should feel intimidated by that. He's walking around in his, like, that outfit that whenever he's in metal, you're like, oh, that's somebody wearing a whole bunch of clothes. And then whenever he's not metal, it's like, you realize that there's, like, a sleeveless thing going on that has very, like, low. And then he doesn't wear pants. Like, he's wearing, like, little undies. And you're just like, he's like built, like so built. And he's just standing there, like looking like majestic with his arms folded. And like Pete Wisdom is like crumpled in like dirty clothes, like smoking cigarettes all the time. Like, I'm just like, yeah, dude, you should be intimidated right now. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, Pietor is annoying, right? Like, he's not good for Kate. Like, I'm not saying that he would be or anything like that. Mm-hmm, but mm-hmm. I'm also like, yeah, Pete, like, her ex is super hot.
And he's basically wearing the same outfit as Wolfsbane. So
Wolfsbane in her booty shorts, like, it's so funny. And she's got those like shoulder pads and has like the spikiest hair I've ever seen. Sometimes he draws her in this way that's like very subtle and you can see the kind of like fur effect. And then sometimes it's just like the spikiest, wildest hair I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. And I like it more when it's a little bit more subtle. Whenever it's super spiky, I'm like, what is going on? Wolfsbane?
She's had all the haircuts because, you know, she's gone from like the close crop ginger to, you know, 1991's hottest Wolverine haircut to now she's got like super long hair. Between Pacheco and Jones, they basically just give her hair. Yeah, it's like a super long ponytail.
The longest ponytail I've ever seen. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. But speaking of characters that Ellis does love, Megan, who gets the honors of collapsing the base by, I don't know, something with electromagnetic fields or I
whatever.
Genuinely can't tell what her power set is during this period. I just know that like Ellis wants her to be the biggest threat on the team.
Mm-hmm. Which is fine. She deserves
it. Oh, yeah. I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, she's fun in this. She has like her quirky little one-liner and then she's out, you know? She's like, yeah, just shut up. Blew a bunch of stuff up. And they're like, what would we do without you? And she's like, I guess you'd have to hire a bunch of bulldozers. Like, whatever. And you're like, all right.
Everyone laughs. Freeze frame.
All right, dad joke. Like, what's up, dad joke, Megan? Like, I have a good time with this. She did grow up watching all those sitcoms, so it only makes sense.
It's a good balance for Angry Dad Nightcrawler at this point.
It is. They're always such a good balance to each other. I love those two. When they interact, I just think it's so fun. I never like shipped them or something. I never like wanted them necessarily to date each other, but I love their friendship. They have such a good dynamic.
Absolutely. But in the end, the robot they wanted was in another castle. And we get this sort of lovingly rendered shot of Doug Locke in the clouds, all purple,
I know. It's
looking like
beautiful.
Eazy-E at the end of the Crossroads video.
Yep.
And then we switch scenes because we forgot about Brian. So he's been hanging out with the Black Queen of the London Hellfire Club, who reveals she's the first one to get a name. She reveals her name as Misdeed. Now, a few things on this, because I've been waiting for the London Hellfire Club to get interesting and I'm tired of asking, are we there yet? I'm just going to jump the gun. So Steed's first name will later be revealed to be Emma, as in Emma Steed, as in a portmanteau of Emma Peel and John Steed from the 1960s British Avengers TV show. Which, okay, great. That's
Look,
cool.
X-Men is already full of Avengers references, but yeah, please go ahead.
But that also means that now the London and the US Hellfire Clubs both have Emmas. So, double your derivativeness, double your fun, I guess. Three, and again, I don't even know when this part is revealed, probably the next couple of issues, but we've actually met this character before in the Age of Apocalypse, as Damask in Excalibur, which is how I'm just going to pronounce it.
Damask. Oh my God, she's so scary. She's so scary. Ah, I love that character. What does she do in Age of Apocalypse? I just remember her being absolutely terrifying. She like skins somebody, right? Like, isn't she just like playing around with knives and like killing somebody slowly? And you're just like, what is this? Like, I just watched so much wild stuff happen in this crossover. And this is like one of the wildest. I just remember her always being so scary.
I think, yeah, she was hunting Nightcrawler while he was trying to find Mystique in the Savage Land. That was another one I didn't reread. There was like
I
a
loved the Salty X vibes because Destiny is like there and it's just like, hey, Mystique, what's up? And she's just like, what's up? And like they have this like weird standoff because they had like a disagreement. And I'm just like, I love off again, on again exes. Like I love them so much. But yeah, no, I think that yeah, she was like hunting him. And just like the first time they see show her, she has like some kind of like weird mask or like she has like a like paint on her. I don't remember what's going on with her outfit. But she does this like absolutely like tortures this dude and you're just like man this is like the scariest thing ever. Here she looks like one of the characters from the Avengers TV show. Like that's just they're like very much committing to the bit here, right?
British lady in a cat suit, just with different color hair.
Pretty much. Yeah, I love this. I love British Hellfire Club. I love all of the Hellfire Clubs because they're like, as you said, they're kind of boring, right? Like they're like rich people that are just always having orgies and you're just like, oh my God, disgusted. But like literally, you're still just like, okay, I still want to read this. Just like you pervy rich people, but it's so funny that it exists. Like it's hilarious to me that this is in an X-Men comic. Like literally, she's like, yeah, go ahead and hit me up if you want anything. And Brian's like, whoa. While he's like,
Brian, who's in his robe.
and drinking champagne and brooding. And like,
Yeah.
it's so funny to me because he's like, somehow that's strangely compelling. And it's just like, yeah, you're in the orgy house and you're probably going to be in some orgies. So you might as well just get used to it now. Yeah, it's just like a wild. Her pose where she's just like standing there with like in the cat suit. She has like her arms out, like I'm just reaching for my coat, but like she's doing like a very sexy pose. Like, don't stop me. I'm like leaving right now. And he's just like, I'm gonna drink this champagne.
I don't want to. I'm an alcoholic. I shouldn't be, but
I
here we
know.
are.
He's like, I don't want to drink this or hook up with that lady or hook up with the next lady that's gonna walk into my house. Like, I don't, it's not what I would choose to do. Of course, I would choose to be with Megan, of course, but like, I'm just gonna get shit wasted and be in some orgies because that's what you do in the British Hellfire Club.
It's a deep cover mission. I mean, I gotta go native.
So funny. It's just like, yeah, everybody's just walking around in their underwear. Like, I don't know what else you're gonna do. It's really funny whenever Rachel Summers and Magma went to the Hellfire Club in the Claremont, and they're both just like, or like Rachel can read people's minds, and she's like, oh my God. She's all dressed like a maid, being like, That's how I view the Hellfire Club. I'm just like, I don't even know how they get anything done. How are you guys doing supervillain stuff? You know that you're just wearing kinky clothes and like just being like, I'll take over the world first. No, I'll take over the world. And it's like, that's their foreplay. It's so weird. Brian fits right in, honestly.
More or less. And I also love how clearly you can read the label on the champagne bottle. It's Moët and Chandon, Dom Pérignon, Hellfire Club 1961.
Yes, it's very fancy. They sent me a bottle of champagne one time because I wrote about one of their ad campaigns for Adweek, and it was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. It was in like this huge box, and I was just like, "What? What? Booze? Thank you, Moët Chandon. Thank you." It was like the greatest gift anybody ever gave me. But this guy just gets it all the time. There's just like bottles of champagne laying around, and I find that to be actually kind of offensive. Like, how dare you share it with everybody?
They've got a wine cellar and they probably have to clean that as much as they clean all the other orgy rooms.
God. And then see that here's the thing. The reason that you know that there's just kinky orgies is not necessarily all of the people who are dressed in their underwear, but the fact that the Hellfire goons are wearing like masks and have like really skin tight, like head to toe, like black spandex outfits with
Gimp
like
outfits, yes.
boots, with boots too, right? So
Yeah.
you're just like, no, listen to me. Like, they're not only having orgies, they're having very kinky orgies, and they're doing it all of the time. I don't know how they even posed a threat to global domination or whatever. I
They
don't.
should just be tired all the time.
I would be. I'm like, what are you doing? You already have money. That was Shinobi Shaw, right? Just laying around being like, I already have money. Win the upstarts, I guess. Is this like, what happens after I win the upstarts game? That guy. Who's back? Everybody's back. Like, I remember that guy being like dying around this time. But he is
He
now.
killed himself. He used his power on himself
Isn't that so funny?
because Cyclops was being proactive.
Cyclops was being proactive. They
They
blow up
literally they
something.
killed the upstarts went out and killed the nasty boys and decided their work here was done and murder suicided each other.
That's like how you win. That's how you win the game.
Yeah.
You
Talk
all
about saving
blow
the
each
best for
other up.
last.
I know. It's like, great work, Shinobi. Look at
We
this
did it.
guy.
We offed Gorgeous George.
I know. Just like, dang. Dang, we needed to keep him around. Gorgeous George and the Nasty Boys never invited to an orgy at the Hellfire Club, not once.
No. Maybe the Green Lagoon, but not the Hellfire Club.
God. That it blows up. There's something that blows up in the city,
There's
right?
an explosion with no information and no follow-up. That's a problem for next issue. And then finally we have a scene where a couple Black Air goons are working on Duglock and they awaken the latent zero personality in him, calling back to again the Duglock Chronicles, which I only half remember, and didn't reread for this podcast because Pete wasn't in it. And the Phalanx were never cool until 2019. But you know, the only thing I really remember is that Zero might have had some data in him on the legacy virus because, you know, he was Strife's pet or whatever.
Right. They're like, we got to do a callback to Strife, like get Zero in here or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think this last page is really cool. This like Doug Locke with like half of his face gone is like such a cool. I mean, he looks awesome through this whole thing.
Very Terminator, yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. I like this ending scene, but it is kind of just like, oh, cybernetics, huh? Like kind of in the same way that like the explosion is like, oh, there's like an explosion on the horizon, huh? Like, okay. All right, all right.
I feel like they don't hit the same. I feel like, you know, the Zero thing, it's one of those things that they was very popular in this time where it's like this minor acknowledgement of, hey, the legacy virus is still a thing. Don't forget, we're not going to solve it, but we're at least going to pay lip service to it to make it look like we're moving the chains, you know, much like M-Day a decade later, more or less.
Yeah. Yeah, M-Day is still happening, just so you know. Like, they're just like, no, check it out. Like, somebody doesn't have their powers that used to have their powers. Jubilee's a vampire now, in case you didn't realize. Like, so funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, they never solve. Don't they just, like, yeah, the legacy virus just, like, ends, basically, right?
Well, Colossus injects himself with legacy virus.
You'd have to,
as
yeah.
A means to aerosolize antibodies to the legacy.
It
made no goddamn sense. It was like, Scott Waddell wrapping up a plot.
No, that makes sense for sure. Yeah, what are you doing out here? I'm just like, come on. They had no idea. There was very little follow-up. It was whenever Moira dies of the legacy virus, though, and you're just like, back in the day you were like, oh, it's just because I'm a super good person and I like helped all the mutants, you know? And then like later you're just like, Moira, you lie. The ways you lie, Moira.
I didn't even know the Shi'ar had golems.
And you're just like, what are you talking about, Moira? Oh, it's just me, your good friend, Moira.
Good, I'm totally just like human a friend, Moira.
Really good person who likes to help mutants all the time.
Out here living the dream, but it's not a dream if it's real, Charles.
I gotta say that I have like a lot of trust issues after finding out about Moira. I gotta say it kind of like occurred like right around the time whenever like the world got worse because of the pandemic, right? It was like 2019-ish is when House of X, Powers of X
yes.
came out.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. It was like Moira went evil and then like all of this other bad stuff happened. And I think that it gave me trust issues. Moira tells you to your face that she's helping you. It's like, She's not. She's trying to destroy the mutants. She thinks that all the mutants are messed up, even though she is one. Self-loathing. Messed up. That's messed up, Moira.
She wore her boyfriend's skin.
It's funny
and that
how that
drove
was, like,
him
secondary.
To become a ghostwriter.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Moira, she's pretty normal in this, right? Like, she doesn't even really do anything. She's like, oh yeah,
no,
that's fine, go ahead, go attack them, that's cool.
Yeah,
do what you have to do, Kurt. And it's just like, do what he has to do. They're gonna go blow up a all right. Yeah, it's wild. I do think that Excalibur is like a little bit like going buck wild, right? Like, they're just like, let's take out Black Air. Yeah. Sick of them, sick of their faces.
Wrap it up.
Wrap it up. We're sick of them. And then it's like, it really does wrap it up. We don't see too much of them going forward, especially not in the next Excalibur arc that I remember, because then it kind of just turns into like, let's just try to do other X-Men stuff, like where you're just like, it's X-Men basically.
Yeah, no, we're back to that sort of Lobdell era, and then there's Crimson Dawn shit. Pete Wisdom gets on my crazy ex-girlfriend.
Yeah.
That's all I remember. I'm sure there's more. There's an epic collection of the Rab Run, and that's upsetting to me.
They're like, it's epic. Sure is. Everything is now. That's the thing, is if you give it like 20 years, it feels like it's a classic. Even if you don't like it, you're just like, well, I'm not a fan, but it's now a classic because it's been 20 years.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a fan, but unfortunately, I'm a completionist.
I have to agree that this is truly necessary to my experience on this earth, is to read this era of Excalibur. It's just like, sadly, it is, though. It's messed up. That's when I started reading as a kid, for the most part, because that was when they started showing up every single month at the gas station, because it had this push. And then it was like, all right, axe this book. We don't know what we're doing anymore. Just put him back in the X-Men. We're clearly just trying to do an X-Men thing, like get rid of him. Like,
yeah.
in this book. And you're just like, fair enough. These characters are all going to go do X-Men stuff now. Get them out of here.
Yeah, more or less. Well, any final thoughts before we move on to sort of the superlatives of the night?
That's it. Like, I kind of thought that this was a interesting issue because it kind of begins and ends in the same place, right? Like, we have Doug Luck. It's like nothing's changed for him, really. But then there's like a couple of things that they move around in the comic. But for the most part, it's kind of like a filler issue, right? Like, it's necessary for the plot. So not exactly a filler issue, but like kind of a bridge issue. That's what I would say. Like, it's kind of just like, we're crossing the bridge to go to the other part of this story right now.
It's the most action the book has seen in a couple months, but it's still the midpoint of a story that is like 2000s era Bendis Avengers levels of decompressed.
Yeah.
Which is a very sad way of saying that it's ahead of its time.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, it's an interesting time for them. And then after this, everything just kind of goes off on a tangent for a little while. But this issue itself, I thought, was like, it's all right. It has some good character moments. Everybody looks really hot, right?
Yes.
Like, everybody in this book is like looking good.
Pacheco's doing the work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I mean, honestly, like, sometimes I just think Brian's gonna be in an orgy and we've just got to accept that. Megan too, though, for real. Like, just let them be poly. It's fine. Not every couple needs to not be.
Absolutely. All right. So now we go through some of the stats for the issue. How many pages does Wisdom appear in? 8, which is more than the past few issues. So things are looking up there. And he actually did stuff other than fight with a dragon. So there's that. best words of wisdom. And even though I just praised him for not being the comic relief this issue, honestly, my favorite line of his was, "Ow, I've broken me bum."
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say him grousing about Colossus somehow was kind of endearing, I guess.
Oh, yeah. You know, I could flay him, but nah.
I know. It's just like, you couldn't. You probably couldn't. He was an X-Man for like a billion years, Pete. Like,
I mean,
I don't
he
know.
Got, when they fought, he got some good shots in.
That's
he,
true. I feel like I'm like really coming to bat for Colossus in a way I didn't expect myself to, but maybe that's just because his one-liners really are slightly true. You're like, come on, Pete. It's below the belt of this beautiful, handsome man who's also an artist. And
I mean,
poet.
Listen, Ellis isn't defending Colossus, so someone needs to. So
I know.
I appreciate you taking on that role.
I'm just going to take the opposite stance of him. So
nothing wrong with a little healthy contrarianism. Best insult, Pete calls his former coworker at Black Air Scratch a scab, which is pretty much the biggest slur a person in organized labor can call someone.
Yeah, and also it's like the end of the him being in the comic. It's the last line of that part of the story. And he's just like, because I'm going to kill that person, or I should have killed that person when I had a chance. And you're just like, that's where we're ending? Like, the rest of Excalibur is just like, what? Did you just say you wanted to murder this man?
He's barely been relevant to this story.
I know.
But he will be in 99 and 100. Does he use his hot knives in this issue? Yes, finally, it's been 6 issues since the Colossus fight, and Pacheco draws them looking like actual blades, and it's nice.
It's fun. Yeah, I like that part. Mm-hmm. And he's all just like, I'm gonna wreck some stuff. Like, it's always a fun scene.
it's always nice when you can get a little revenge on an unsatisfying employer. Your former employer.
Yeah, like Godspeed.
Does he smoke in this issue? Yes. At one point, Pete is dramatically lit, lighting up a cigarette against a screen showing Doug's kidnapping. And so Doug actually looks like shocked behind him that Pete is smoking, which means they haven't hung out much.
He makes also a reference because whenever he is flying through the air, like Megan has to carry him and Wolfsbane at the same time. And she's just like, please stop choking me, like, while she's like trying to land, because they're both like, oh, I hate flying. And she's like, I don't love it when it's like this, basically. But then he's like, oh, it crushed me smokes or whatever. And you're like, yeah, of course you did.
Yeah, he's got another good line there too when he's hanging from Megan. He's like, if I were meant to fly like this, I'd have airline miles stuffed up my.
And she's just like, stop choking me. I hate this. Loved that part.
Fashion watch, Pete is in his standard men's warehouse suit, but with no tattering this time, just wrinkles. Letters about Pete Wisdom, a lean one page of Stuart Strokes in this issue after a few months in a row of like 3 pages of letters. Toby Ingram of Colchester, England writes on Excalibur number 94, the one where they go to the future. The humor came in sharp waves from Ellis's sublime creation, Pete Wisdom, a shabby, chain-smoking, grouchy old man leading a group of mismatched cynics who have no idea what he's talking.
Sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah.
You clocked it.
Nailed it. Understood the assignment. Meanwhile, in some of the other X books that month, Uncanny X-Men number 333 is the first appearance of Bastion, the post-human Nimrod Master Mold hybrid, who will go on to be the big bad of the following year's X-Men event, OZT. There's a blurb about the character at the top of the page, and according to Scotty Lobbs, Bastion is to humanity what Xavier and Magneto are to humankind. And I feel like if he was actually put over as post-human Magneto, he'd have stood the test of time as a character. But he was cool for the summer of 97, I guess.
He was, yeah. Got to give it up.
Yes. X-Men 53 is that issue where Mark Waid reminds everyone that of that one panel in X-Men number 3 where Professor Xavier thinks to himself that he's in love with Jean.
Yeah, I love that issue, though. It's messed up, right? Like, I hate that part, but I love that issue.
It's a good issue. It's a good Jean spotlight.
One of the best Jean stories of that whole era, I think. It's so good. And, like, the whole time she's just arguing with him and being like, the world isn't like you say it is. Like, I'm not even listening to you. And then he's like, what about that one time whenever Xavier wanted to make out with you? And you were like 16. And she's like, what? And that's like where it goes. Like, that's where she gets like kind of cold cocked in the issue. Like, she gets like totally taken by surprise. And that at the end, it's like onslaught, like on her forehead. It's a really good issue. It's messed up. Like, you're just like, that's probably how that revelation would feel. We wish that we didn't have to do that, because guess what? Xavier's been a sketchball 900 other times, especially to Jean. Like, it could have just been him being a sketchball. Like, he's always, you know, trying to be like, oh, you're too powerful or like whatever. And that's what opens the door to the Phoenix. Like, it, she would have been better prepared if she had had a mentor that wasn't always asking her to lock parts of herself away. And like, that's kind of the tragedy of their relationship, is because I believe that he really does love her, right? In like this kind of father-daughter way. That's the thing, like that issue, it just like drives me up the wall, because it's like, you didn't have to take it in that direction. None of us wanted that callback, like not a single one of us. But then it's also just like, yes, it would have been very easy just to pretend that never happened, because it's only one panel. Like, we could have just totally ignored that forever. Like, we never needed to say it. But because it did come up, that issue is actually incredible. And I think that people should read it, even though you're going to have one moment where you're like, oh no, I wish I didn't read this. It's just one moment.
The stuff preceding Onslaught is better than Onslaught.
So much. Yeah, by a wide margin. That's why I didn't leave the comics whenever it was going on. I was like, this is pretty good. Like, there's a lot of good lead up. When the Avengers come in and they're fighting and it goes into like Heroes Reborn.
Yeah.
That's kind of good too, actually, because like they're just kind of tearing up with the Sentinels like all over Manhattan, and then Onslaught stuff is going on. And like that, the resolution's not good, you know. It's like very goofy. It's just like Professor X and Franklin Richards like arguing in a room or something, just like a very weird, or like they're trying to like help each other or something. It's just a very weird ending to that story. But there are some epic fight scenes whenever the Avengers show up. So there's good things about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see. Further Adventures of Cyclops and Phoenix number one. Scott and Jean travel to the Victorian era to learn the origin of Mr. Sinister, drawn by the late John Paul Leon.
So good. Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird two-issue series, right? Is it two issues or like
four,
I don't know,
three?
Maybe four. Maybe
I don't
four,
remember.
Yeah, but it's really fun. It's like some of it just ignore. You know, it's the same as any kind of like Cyclops and Phoenix thing where you're like, some of it just don't pay attention. You can just read past it. Like you don't need to know. It's like if they contradict themselves, guess what? It's time travel. It's so confusing. Like the continuity is just not there. Just assume that they returned 5 minutes earlier than you thought they did and everything changed, right? So it's easy to explain that kind of stuff. But it's from what I remember, that art is just so gorgeous that it's like you will forgive literally anything that doesn't make sense anyway, because it's just beautiful.
The important thing to take away from it is Cyclops met his own great great grandfather and encouraged him to procreate.
Yeah. And Cyclops is like, all right, I'm gonna have some time stream kids.
Exactly. Wolverine 102, Elektra tracks Logan through the streets of New York while he wears a bandana around his head and has no nose like a goddamn feral ninja turtle.
Yeah, that era. Honestly, it's like, oh God, what's the writer's name? I'm like spacing it.
Larry Hama?
Yes, Larry Hama. He's so amazing. I love his run on Wolverine. It totally goes wild, but then it's like, did he have any control over that? I don't think so. Like, it seems like that was like a editorial decision or something where they were like, now he's going to have a bandana over his head. And now he's Raphael from the Ninja Turtles, only like dog version or whatever. And you're like, fine. But it still is kind of good comics, especially because he brings Elektra in. And like Elektra's great in that run. And you're just like, there you have it. Like, I mean, yeah, that was just an excuse for you to do that, basically. So,
I mean, he has her keep him as a pet for a couple months, stick house breaks him, and then he more or less goes back to normal and has like regular Japan ninja adventures in the next story.
Yeah, I love that. I love Larry Hama's run on Wolverine. I think that still is like the definitive Wolverine for me.
Oh, agreed. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
It is that good shit. And then finally, Generation X number 16, Jubilee, Emin, Husk fight an M-plate possessed Sync, now known as the greatest goddamn mutant of all time.
He's great. Isn't it so nice? You're like, good God, if you were reading Generation X in the 90s, it's just truly heartwarming to see where our kids have gone, isn't it? Like you have, you know, some of them are getting a lot less spotlight than others, but like Monet and Sync coming out of that as just such heavy hitters, even to this day, is just like, mwah, chef's kiss.
And even Skin in the Sabretooth stuff that Victor Laval's doing, he's had a couple of good moments in there.
I love that character. Yeah, I loved Generation X whenever it was first coming out. I very viscerally remember the comic that you're talking about, number 16. I read all of them. I loved that series. I like used to read fan fiction about it on the internet. Fan fiction where like Skin and Husk hooked up, where I was like, okay, that's a weird one, I guess.
Their power sets kind of complement each other.
It's
think about
totally
it.
True. And like their weird personalities, because they're just kind of like jiving at each other all the time. It's like Chamber always is like so boring because he's like, oh, she's hot. Like, what would she ever want to do with me? Like, or whatever. And you're just like, yeah, what would she want to do with you? You complain too much. Like, he's always just like, get away from me. I have to be alone. And you're just like, ugh, this guy. But Skin is like much more chill. Anyway, I love Skin. I love a lot of these characters from this era. It's just like, I'm glad that many of them are doing, like getting some spotlight again.
Absolutely. Okay. Ad Watch. We got clear sill pads. We got Van sneakers. We got String Thing, which is a candy I do not remember, but that seems to ask, what if red vines, but foot fruit by the foot? We have the Spalding NBA Sweep the Playoffs Dream Stakes, which offers you a game ball, a Disney vacation, and tickets to an Orlando Magic game, but then shows you a picture of Hakeem Olajuwon from the Houston Rockets. Mile High Comics, Earthworm Jim cartoon VHS cassettes, Nerds with X-Men Olympics cards on the back because it was an Olympic year, a house ad for Elektra, speaking of her, Skittles, and combos. So,
oh, the combos, right? That was like all over these comics.
Yeah, not Combo Man, just regular combos.
Oh yeah. Yeah. But, combos were like the snack for like this era. It was like drinking Surge and eating combos and reading X-Men comics. That was like my life.
I support all sodas that start with the letter S. Surge, Storm, Explode, they're all great.
Yeah.
A lot, but it does feel like a lot more candy and junk food in this comic than usual, but
yeah,
that's what the Clearasil pads are for.
Yeah. That'll help you out.
Yeah. Sarah, this was a fantastic time. Before we go, how can people follow you online and support all the cool stuff that you're doing?
Yeah, you could follow me on Twitter. I'm at Sarah Century. We never know how long we're going to be on a social media. So good luck. You could follow me at Instagram if you wanted. I feel like Instagram is a little bit more personal for some reason. And a lot of the time I'm just posting pictures of my rabbits and cats. that's pretty cute, but like, I don't know. It's very niche, I guess. And then also there is my website, sarahcentury.com. Of course, you can listen to Bitches on Comics and Decoded Horror Channel on any of the places where you get podcasts, and we really appreciate it when you do. Like, we have been getting more and more listeners lately, and it's super nice. I'm glad for everyone who is joining us. And of course, you could find my book at Weird Punk Books. There has to be probably like 17 or 18 other places that you can find me on the internet. Like, I'm not hidden, you know, in any way, shape, or form. So people can find me. Just run a Google search. I've written for like 100 websites at this point. That's a gross exaggeration, but many, many websites, right? Lots of them.
You're out there, and we appreciate it. And next month we got more Black Air and London Hellfire Club stuff. And if that wasn't enough, we also have Onslaught stuff. And also Joe Casey's back again on art. So until next time, listeners, sawed off Torag.